7-day intensive seminar, School of the Master, continuing with Lecture 11. Priorities. Unless I know my priorities, I will be inundated by confusion. I know what it is my first objective. I have instant results. Positive statement. I know what is my first objective. I have instant results. The game I often play of excessive words to describe my choices reveals my showmanship priority. I want to put on a show. My priority is my business. I do not share my dreams or choices with others. This empowers my desire beautifully. So, let's pay attention to these things for a moment here. Unless I know my priorities, I will be inundated by confusion. Tomorrow morning, when you come to the 3-hour meditation, I would like each one of you to write down 7 priorities, 7 statements of priority, and hand them in here to me so that I can look them over and smile at them and see what your priorities are. Put your name on and put your priorities. Unless I know my priorities, I'll be inundated by confusion. Why would we be confused if we don't know our priorities? I say to you, okay, what is the greatest joy in your world? What is the greatest desire of your life? What is the greatest thing that if it ever happened to you, you would just be soaring in ecstasy? What is the thing that would make you most happy right now and eternally if you experienced it? Who are you? Who are you? Do you know who you are? Do you know what your body is? Do you know what your life is? Do you know what is your priority? Is your priority to live in your whole healthy body? Is your priority to be a spiritual master? You know, is your priority to be able to speak your word and instantly bring about results? What is your priority? What priority do you have? Do you think that your priority is Bailey? Well, it's far from that. Because if you don't keep yourself in shape, and you don't keep yourself absolutely number one, fantastic, you won't be around to help Bailey. You know? So what good is it if you're just going to put her as your priority? You want her to get the benefits of you knowing your priority. And then you, silly girl, you go and ask Bailey what her priority is. And she might surprise you. She might surprise you. And Ingeborg, if you knew what your priority was, you would be very surprised. You'd be very surprised. Because you think your priority is a lot of things, a lot of proper things, the proper thing to be a spiritual master, to be whole and perfect, to be a delightful person, to be da-da-da, all these. That's not your priority. And I'm not going to give it to you. I want you to give it to me. I want you to think about what your priority is. And 7. You got 7 choices. And 7 of them. And just make sure that each one is just as important as the other. Each one is just as significant as the other. For we just don't know our priorities. We don't know what our priorities are. We have no idea what our priorities are. Because we just think we do, but we really don't. As an illustration, you're going to go and visit a friend. Now, is your priority to go visit this friend? Is your priority to go out and get in the car and drive over there? Is your priority to have the car drive, you know, function and take you there? Is your priority to get dressed pretty so that you look nice as you go visiting your friend? Is your priority to take a gift along? Oh, I almost forgot that, you know. Maybe that's not a priority. Is your priority to take flowers or to take some object? Is your priority to take something that is precious to you? Or is your priority not to take a gift, but to take you as the gift? Is your priority to be as charming looking as possible? You go to the hairdresser and you go to this and that and the other thing, you know, get yourself all groomed up pretty so that you look nice for that lady or that man. Huh, joke. In all respects, we're doing it for ourselves. in all respects, we're doing it for us. But now, do you understand your priorities? Do you understand your priorities? If you look good, you think you'll have self-confidence, and you think that you'll put on a good show when you go to visit your friend, and you never thought that all of these things were coming into play just when you go to visit your friend, you know. And your friend maybe is someone you visited every day. But this day is going to be a new day. This day, you're taking along 10,000 friends that you hadn't thought about. 10,000 stem cells. Do you want those stem cells to go into her house or his house? Do you want them to be associated with those things that go on in that house, which may not be bad or good, but do you want them to be associated there? You got to be very careful where you take that 10,000 stem cell gang, where you take yourself, and where you take what you are. So, ha, 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 have fun. Write down 7 beautiful concepts, which are your priorities, and realize that, first out of the bag, you may not cover them all perfectly, but at least you get started. You get started on the idea that's important to you. Okay. I know what is my first objective, and I have instant results. My first objective is to go and visit my friend. And I have instant results, I visit my friend. Now, what goes on? Is you're visiting your friend, does she really want you to come? Does she have a busy morning? Is the baby kind of owly today, you know? Is this not her day to entertain friends because the kid's acting up? Well, what's going on, you know? What sort of a thing? Well, what sort of attitudes have you put in motion before you even started out the door? Have you put in motion an attitude that this is a beautiful day, I go forth to greet my good and to share it with everyone? And again, we give you all the answers. I know what my first objective is, and I have instant results. When we know what our objective is, our priority, when we know what we're going out to do, we accomplish it. We accomplish it. She's never home when I call. She never is around when I come. Every time I go there, things are not just as happy at all. The whole house is always a mess, and she has money to see the house a mess, but the house has never been cleaned in all the years I've known her, and things like that. And you're going to create a new world. The game I often play of excessive words to describe my choices reveals my showmanship priority. When you get to visit with your friend, do you babble like a brook? Or do you say, you're wonderful, tell me what you've been doing? Be interested in the other person, that's why you're going there. But have you thought of taking a visit to yourself? Visiting yourself, go over and visit yourself and sit at the kitchen table with yourself and have a cup of coffee with yourself. Have 2 cups sitting out there, you know? And to give you sort of the idea, and then say, well, my love, how are you doing? And you'll answer yourself, and you'll say, I'm doing real great. And having you here to visit me makes my day. Oh, it's so great. You know, you're such a wonderful person. Well, yes, I am kind of wonderful, but I think I'm a reflection of you. Well, yeah, I'm a reflection of you, too. But you see, have I... And put the mirror there. There you go. There you go. And you really have a visit with yourself. But you see, this is great. This is great. Now, all great actors are mirrorists. They are in love with the mirror. These people who are the great actors all have their mirrors in special places. They're not interested in sexual things with the mirror. They're not interested in, but they're interested in how their body looks. What sort of a feeling do they give out? How their face looks? What sort of gesture do they have? What sort of body gesture do they have? What sort of facial gesture? What sort of images? What sort of output are they giving, you know, to the world? And as they look at their face, they say, "Well now, well now, well now." Well, now, you know, all the way with just a couple little words and a couple little gestures and a couple little attitudes that make them feel quite different, quite lovely. Now, these are human things. These are relative things. And they're fine things. When you are master of your relative self, you certainly find being master of your spiritual self quite easy. You slip right into it just as easy as can be, because first you are disciplined with yourself and unconditionally in love with yourself, which is a wonderful thing to do, to be unconditionally in love with yourself, to delight in your presence, to delight in the fact that you're having coffee with yourself, you know? Now, think of this, my precious one. You're going to have a visit with yourself. How about that, you know? Now, are you going to take a shower first? You're going to get cleaned up? You're going to put on your beautiful dress or your nice shorts and shoes and whatever, or you're going to be naked or whatever you want to be. How are you going to be when you visit yourself? Are you going to be sensitive about being naked? Or are you going to be sensitive about not having your best clothing on, your best shoes or your best dress or your best pants? Are you going to be sensitive about that? If you are, be careful. Now, you're going to have a visit with yourself. Now, what is this self-visit going to be about? Is it going to be just a casual little, hi, how are you? Good, me too, you know? Or is it going to be something that says, you know, every time I'm in your presence, I feel as though I'm a turned on power unit. I'm just turned on with all the joy and electricity and the vibrations. And they say that when I come near the meeting hall, they can feel my vibrations when I'm a mile or more away. And I think they're pulling my leg a little bit, and I think maybe they're not. I think maybe I do have tremendous vibrations. My vibrations of love are just overwhelming, and the whole world is blanketed by my love. The world and the universe. The universe is blanketed by my love. Hey, how about that, you know? The allness is blanketed by my love. I surround all with my pure white light of love. Now, isn't that what you're saying? I surround everything with my pure white light of love? Well, who the heck do you think you are that your pure white light of love can reach everything? It can go around the world. Well, that's just what it can do. That's just what it can do. In your ignorance, in your thoughtlessness, you might say, you say the right thing. I surround all with my pure white light of love. Hey, cool. You know, I surround all with my pure white light. You are doing such grand, great, glorious things. You are unconsciously saying things and you're getting away with it. Which if you would consciously think about it, you say, who do I think I am that I can put my love around everything and have it be mean and be something, be really meaningful at all? How can I do that? Well, we do. That's why I say to you, when you sing, you can sing the dumbest things and get away with it. Oh, bury me not on the lone... Who's talking about being buried and being dead? And yet that's a song we sing. You know, I died with my boots on. Bury me with my boots on. These are the cowboy songs that they sang, you know. And it's interesting, the things that they did. You know, if you want to do the worst thing you could ever do to a cowboy, the worst thing you could ever do is to take his horse and his shoes. And he is dead. He cannot walk and he cannot move. He can't. He walks a little ways in his stocking feet or whatever, and he's dead. His feet are not accustomed to walking on flat ground. He has these arched heels that go up to catch the stirrup as he rides, and his feet are not accustomed to that. He wears his boots virtually night and day. And that's the way he lives and plays. And that's the way he comes or goes and stays. It's just the way that his life is. Now, that's why he sings these melancholy songs. Now, a cowboy who has a dog is a totally different person. A cowboy who has a dog is like a man who has a wife or a woman who has a man. They have someone precious in their life. Another animal won't do it, but a dog does this. That's why dogs became domesticated animals way back in the early, early years when man was still a rather savage character. You might say Neanderthal, going way back. But the natural proclivity of man is to love and share his love. And if he has no one to share his love with, he becomes a sort of a useless, melancholy being. That's just the way he is. And when he has something to share his love with, which is why most men get families and most women have families, and then they gather children around them, all for something to love. Not because they need to have the children to help build the community or do these things. That's what our science tells us, that that's what they did. But that's not what they did. They needed somebody to love and someone to love them. They needed to have this interaction of love, of sharing, of being with one another. And this is part of their divine nature. Now, what in the world, what in the hell, what in the world is God? God is love.
Oh, love.
And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about love. I mean, all these other things are true. They're true. But I mean, I can't have you give me the definition of the dictionary for God. We're saying God is love. This is what we're taught about God in the New Testament. God is love. The Old Testament has God being some pretty other things. But God is love. Now, why is God love? Because love is one of the primary objects of a spiritual being. Love is one of the primary objects of a spiritual master. A spiritual master is pure, unconditional, unconditional love without any conditions. He is pure love. He loves everybody. He doesn't like what everyone does, but he loves everyone unconditionally. He loves them and blesses them and holds them in his attention unconditionally. Now, this is what humanity has done from the beginning of its experiences, you might say, back to the ancient tribal men on up through today. Now, what is it that holds countries together? Love of country, love of mother, love of God. Which one, which rotation are they in? Sometimes we wonder, don't we? And in Germany, it was the love of the what? The fatherland. The fatherland. And in Iraq, Iran, these interesting countries who are having a little difficulty, do they want the American democratic system in their country? Not at all. That's not what they grew up with. That's not where their values are. That's not what's important to them. We think that we're so good by giving them our lollipops, but they don't want our lollipops. They want their strong coffee or whatever it is they want. But they don't want these things that other countries hold dear to them. Now, do you think that Germany would allow the United States to come in and make Germany a United States, Germany of the United States? No way. Do you think Italy, even if we were to come in there and pour money in there and take care of Italy and make it beautiful, that they would allow themselves to become the United States? No way. And yet they would take all the money they can get from us, and that's okay. Any country would. But that's for what reason? That's because they don't have to believe in what we believe to get the money. And that should be a criterion. Anyone who wants what we have has to believe what we believe. Anyone who wants what we have has to believe what we believe. Anyone who wants what we have must believe what we believe. And that's why we're so enforceful in the international travelers who come to the United States, and they still can't speak English. They still can't they even go to school. We've set up separate Mexican schools for them so they can learn, go to school learning Mexican and doing their own former native language. And they don't want to become a part of the United States. All they want is to have our economy. They want just the benefits from it. Now, this is all good. Do you know that that action, whether you applaud it or not, that action is one of the most sincere and interesting acts of unconditional love that any country can have for another country? Can you imagine Switzerland having Italian schools to educate the Italians who come to Switzerland and work there and teach them how to be Italians in Switzerland? I kind of doubt that there'd be too much enthusiasm for that. And the same for any other country which has a group of people who might be third world country people coming into their world and wanting to live in their world and retain their qualities. In the United States, in the early years, there were German schools and there were Italian schools and Polish schools from every nation where people came to the United States. But that soon faded away when the younger generations associated with each other and they spoke one language, and thereby they didn't need to have that heritage that didn't mean anything to them anymore. If being an Italian meant that you loved your nation and your country, well, stay there and help it to be beautiful, keeping your genius there. But if you're going somewhere else, then you're expected to sort of be, when in Rome, do as the Russians do, Romans do, right? yeah. Can you imagine Russia allowing people to act like Czechoslovakians in Russia? No way. Even when the Spanish conquered Central South America, they took all of these people and they made them learn, naturally become Christians, and they made them learn the English language, and they made them do all these things. And the people secretly kept up their own culture. They would not endorse it. They merely endorsed it publicly because they had to, but they privately didn't do that. And this happened in Russia during the Second World War, First and Second World War. The Christian churches were put down severely. Most other churches were too, but they had underground churches. And underground, they kept alive in the young people the Christian ethic. And the Christian ethic stands today only because it was kept alive in the underground by them. You see, we have these priorities. The game I play is often excessively wordy. And because it's excessively wordy, it's just a showmanship type thing. Now, I could give you one illustration, and it should be enough to tell you the concept that I want to tell you. Unconditional love is what we want to express, learn, and be in ourselves. That should be our priority. That should be one of our primary things that we want to do, is to live, be, act, and enjoy unconditional love under all circumstances. All right, my priority is my business. I do not share my dreams or choices with others. This non-sharing of these dreams and choices with others is what keeps my desires beautifully. This empowers my desires beautifully, period. So, can you do that? Are you so bubbly over with your enthusiasm that you want to tell everybody, I'm God? Did you know that you're God? You know, we want to tell everybody that. Whenever we find that out and that becomes something significant to us, we want to tell the world. Well, this is why evangelism and missionary people have so much trouble. Because they go somewhere and try to make people follow their customs, their beliefs, their attitudes, and their way of life. And, you know, why is it Christianity has failed miserably throughout the world all the years that it has been here? Why wouldn't Christianity be one of the most wonderful religions in the world? Because Christianity is taught not on the basis of what Christianity really is, the philosophy of Christianity, but it's taught on Bible times. You're expected to think about how they did it in Jesus' time. And the modern generation doesn't buy that. And the modern generation is every generation after the generation of the experience of Jesus, you know. And if they had just made, if mathematics were held in the time of the early mathematicians and were taught in the language of the early mathematicians, mathematics might have had a little struggle getting a foothold. But mathematics became cultureless. Mathematics became ethnicless. Mathematics became whatever. but it just became a tool that was so universal that it was applicable everywhere in everything. And you don't say it's a German math, or it's an English math, or a French math. It is just math. And it is universal, the same everywhere. Now, we have new math, and all that is just some shortcuts that they want people to learn, and nobody's interested in learning them, because they'd rather learn the total foundation and have it square in the face, and then go on from there. But can you learn math faster? No, you can't. You learn math in the simple way that you learn it. Can you create a baby without an egg and a sperm? No. You think you can. You think you can. You think you can do it with your mind. Well, I can tell you, it's a lot more work with your mind than it is with just the egg and the sperm. The egg and the sperm have already been given the foundation of creation. You know, they've been given the foundation of procreation. And it's beautiful, and it's a very simple process. They have done it without human bodies. They've taken the eggs and the sperm separately and put them together and brought about children. But the point is, that is the simple process. Now, if we want to go in our scientific toolbox and figure out what all makes up the egg, how the egg is created, and then have these eggs created artificially and have the sperm created artificially, there will always be something left out. There will always be some genius of the human being, of the mind, or the body of the parent, the mother, the father, whatever, which is something that it's invisible. You can't see it. You don't know it. And it's that little something that makes the human being not a robot, but makes it a human being with human values and human caring. And also, you might say, it has that area which makes it divine. That's something which, not that it makes it compassion, that's not divine. The divine is something that is the ultimate. You step beyond all boundaries and you reach out into the unlimited and are expressing what is a master, what is a divine being. Now, you and I personally haven't probably seen a divine being, and wouldn't know one if we saw it, but we have a feeling that everything good and beautiful and wonderful is what makes up a divine being. And that in itself is enough to drive us on to learn more about a divine being. So these are things that we might consider. Our priority, for instance, many of these scientists, and we have worked with them here on the stem cells. They're working with the stem cells. You know what they're trying to do now? The scientists are trying to create the stem cell. They're trying to create the original purity and integrity stem cell. Now, good for them. Good for them. But what's going to happen when they create the original purity and integrity as in the stem cell? What's going to happen?
It's already differentiated because they create it physically. It has differentiated matter in it.
Two. What's going to happen when scientists create a stem cell from their laboratory, so to speak?
Something will be missing.
Exactly. Something will be missing. And they won't know it's missing because they don't know it's there. You know. How do you know it's missing if you don't know it's there? And it'll be missing, and it's that intangible quality that makes it wonderful. You each are divine. You each have within you the allness of the universe, the allness. You have your original purity integrity. You have the allness of the universe within you. And do you think that in the laboratory box of the scientist, that he's going to come up with the allness of the universe? I mean, this is something that we can't even comprehend. We cannot even give it words. We cannot give it understanding. But it is so beautiful and so wonderful and so magnificent and so beyond anything that we could conceive. And yet, for them, it is the most natural thing on earth.
Even God is no nobody is succeeded to create or to make God. It's only simple.
Well, Ingeborg.
It works.
Ingeborg tells us that no one has created God. Well, I would say, that's interesting. I would say, I don't know of anyone who even knows what God is to create God, you know? God is not like George over here, you know? God is not like a stem cell. God is not like, what would you say? God is the allness of the allness, you know? And what is the allness? What is the isness? What is the uniqueness? What is a human being? Just what is a human being? How do you create a human being? How do you put together a human being? Scientists have been playing with that game for a long time, and they have not been very successful. Now, they have cloned animals, but in cloning animals, they used the real essence to clone them. And if you use the real essence to clone them, it's not a clone. It is a reproduction of perhaps a lesser quality being or a more quality being, depending upon whether they have more or less of whatever is supposed to be in there. But it's quite interesting. It's quite interesting. Yes, Ingeborg is very right. They have never created God. And the early Hebrews said they never used the word God because it spoke of something beyond their comprehension, and they would never speak the word God because this was sacrilegious to them, and they also had a statement, no man will ever see God and live. And that's quite something. Now, I would turn that around. Everyone who lives, the living quality within them is God. This is God. Maybe not expressing itself in the fullness that it could, but it's God. And if you took all of the living matter together and squished it together, would you have a greater God? No. You would have a squished together idea of what God might be, but not a matter of a greater God. We are quite some remarkable beings, and the remarkable quality about our beingness is that we can even think about it, that we can even think to speak of it, to understand it, to come up with some sort of a concept about it. And I love Mr. Einstein. I just love him. I love him. I love him. He says, I tell you what I believe. These are my theorems. These are my maxims. These are my statements of what I believe. And if you don't believe it, prove I'm wrong. I have stated what I believe. Now, I don't have to do anything more. I'm perfectly happy. If you don't like what I say, prove that I'm wrong. And if you prove I'm wrong, and I look at it and I say, you're right, I'm wrong. Okay, then I change. But I don't have to do anything. All I have to do is be myself and have fun and dream. And that's why Einstein was so successful. He never had to wait on his things and rediscover them and rediscover them and rediscover them. He never had to, what is the term that they use for this, having it repetitive again, that they repeat the same experiment and come up with the same results. He didn't have to do that. He let the other side...
Replicate. Yeah,
replicate, yes. He didn't have to replicate them. That sounds almost correct. He didn't have to replicate them. He didn't have to repeat the experiment. In an experiment that scientists do, if they put several chemicals together and they come up with something, and that something is very significant, they have to be able to put those several chemicals together time and time again to have the same result. If they don't, then it was a fluke. Then it was an accident. Then there was perhaps some other chemical, some other something there that was acting upon it that they didn't know about. But when they can replicate whatever their experiment is time and time again, then they say, yes, perhaps you're right. But again, you might have accidentally done the same thing a number of times and gotten this result without it really being what it is. You see, we're magic people. We're very magic people. We're very wonderful people. We have within us the magic of accomplishing virtually anything we want to do, any direction we want to go, any power that we want to implement in our life. We have the magic to do it. Now, I like to think that a new avenue of understanding has been opened for us. The avenue of understanding are our stem cells. Stem cells we knew for a long, long time were very special cells, but we felt they were embryonic cells, placenta cells, cells of an infant life. But that was interesting too. You know, a war comes along and they develop a lot of equipment and a lot of machinery which they wouldn't do otherwise. A lot of beautiful big airplanes and stuff. Well, the stem cells came along in the embryo, and humanity says, no, you don't go fooling around with that. No, you don't. There's too much of a chance you might slip and take some live child and take their embryo, their stem cells. No, no, no. And so the scientists, instead of being made unhappy by that, were encouraged to study further. And so they went through the entire human body, every organ, action, and function of the human body, to find out if there were some other places where there are stem cells. And they found lots of places where there are stem cells all over the body. And in finding these stem cells all over the body, they found some of them were more powerful, some of them were more accessible than others. And I want to use the word accessible rather than powerful, but they were more accessible to be used by the scientists for experimentation. And so these are the ones that are being used, these are the ones that are being cultured and grown and replicated so that they can do whatever they expect them to do. Now, I like to think that that's the field of magic that we are privy to right at this moment. We're privileged to be in that field of magic right now, the field of stem cell magic. And we don't have to play the game the scientists could play. I want you to stop and think for a second. The great mathematicians, where did they get the math from? Did they take a stem cell? Yeah, yeah. Did they take a stem cell? Did they take somebody else's thinking? Did they take apart a little kangaroo and come up with mathematics or something like that? No. It was in their head, in their mind. In their stem cells, well, actually. But it was in their mind. They didn't know if it was a stem cell. But they thought it was their mind at work, uninhibited, you know, totally free to think their crazy, mixed up, way out thoughts. Because you can be sure that the early mathematicians were thought to be idiots. Because there was no application for their expertise. There's no application for algebra, for geometry, for trigonometry, for spiritual trigonometry. Spherical trigonometry, and all of these other lovely fields of mathematics and science and chemistry. How long, Irene, being the medical doctor in our midst here, how long has it been that humans existed as humans? Well, many thousands of years, okay? Millions of years, maybe more. And when did medical science approve of dissecting the human body to understand it?
Not long.
Not long. Only within 100 years or so. Because as of the 19th century, they were very abhorrent against cutting into the body. And one man who had an ulcer in his stomach, and his stomach wouldn't heal. And the doctors were able to look inside of him and see how food was digested and see how these things were happening because it was open, you know. And so they put their tubes in there and they're looking in there, and they learned a lot. But they could not cut into the human body because that was not considered proper, you know. And now, what is one of the most, what's the commonest word in medical school? Cadaver. What's a cadaver? A cadaver is a person who has died and given their body to the medical school for research, so that people can get in there and slash away and figure out what's going on or what might have been going on. Isn't that interesting? And a lot of cadavers are people who are on the street, who were alcoholics, who were drunks, who were sexual deviant people, who had many sexual diseases and other interesting things, and the bodies were not normal. You know, they were not, they were bodies with problems. And so they were very eager to have people who died what might be called normal deaths, you know, and no one ever dies a normal death, but who dies a normal death, to have their body be a cadaver for the research in the hospital. And that's what they're doing now, and that's what they have you do on your driver's license. They say, please sign here that your body can be picked up and used by the local hospital for research and development, you know, if you're not there, you know. And when they're done, they will have the remains cremated and give you the ashes. And they might be your ashes and they might not. It'd make a heck of a, how would you know? You know, how would you know? So they just take a scoop of ashes and say, okay, this is John, this is Mary, this is Paul. And this is all beautiful, but you see, the scientists, the mathematicians in early days were not greatly revered, because they were thought to be idiots playing games, as we think many of our philosophers are idiots in their white towers. How long did we talk about white towers, that our educators were in their white towers and their ivory towers? That's a very current thing, even in the 30s and 40s of this year, of this century, you know. Very interesting, you know, very interesting. And people, they're not afraid of education, but they don't understand it. Education doesn't mean a thing. If you say the scientists say this, then they say okay. If the doctor says this, it's okay. Now, you're going to die. But why, doctor? Because my chart says you're going to die. You are going to die because you've got this here and this here and this here. But doctor, I don't have that and that and that. Yes, you do. I have your chart right here in front of me. And that was our friend down at the trailer park. He went in for his annual checkup, and they gave him his annual checkup, but they switched his chart with another guy. And then they called his wife as he was driving home, don't let your husband in the car, don't let him drive. Yeah, we got to get him back to the hospital here. He's dying, he should be dead already, you know, and get him back here. Well, they got him back there. And he says, I feel just fine. What's the problem, you know? And they said, well, this is you, this is you. And then, let's see the chart. And they looked at the chart, somebody else's. Somebody else's chart. I mean, how stupid. You know, they said he was going to die. Now, if he were a sensitive man, oh, I'm going to die, you know. And they might have lost him. And that was not the cause. That was not the cause at all. But so it was Dessa George, wasn't it?
Yeah. Huh? Yeah, that was George.
Yeah, George what?
I thought it was Maria Houston's house.
George and Margaret, yeah, in the trailer park, yeah, and great guy, and he's still out there trucking around, and still enjoying ice cream and cake whenever I see him. Wonderful guy. Okay, now we are told these things by people of authority, and we believe them, and so we act upon it. Now. We have to, I mean, now Einstein comes along and he has his thoughts, and people say, cool. And I told you the story about the Big Bang Theory, about the little atom that got real sad, wanted to have somebody to play with, and so he held his breath and held his breath and held his breath until he exploded into all the Big Bang Theory, all of the universe, into all the stars and everything. And then he had playmates to play with, you know. And this is what the scientist told his children about how the Big Bang Theory came into being. And the kid says, Daddy, don't ever tell anybody you said that. They'll think you're crazy, you know. And so he says, good. If you think I'm crazy, then they'll believe it. And so he wrote the story down as a theory, presented it to the scientific community. Scientific community says, we haven't got a better one to think about, so we'll take that. And it's a theory, T-H-E-O-R-Y, and it is a theory. That means it's somebody's guess. somebody's dream, somebody's idiotic creation out of their mind. Now, you could do it too. All you got to do is have something behind your name, like PhD and PhSC and PH, you know, scientific and stuff like that. And you got that behind your name, then you can say a lot of things. But if you don't have that behind your name, you better be quiet, because you don't know anything. And you may know the answer because you listen within. They took it from somebody else's, and then by going researching other people's papers and papers and papers, like we've done here, going into the Wikiapa and on our, our dictionary study, it's kind of crazy. But this is what it's all about. The mathematicians were not accepted by society until a long, long time, because they had to prove that they had a place. The physicists were not accepted. Who were the idiots of the early 20s and 30s of the 1900s? The idiots were the science fiction writers. These crazy, mixed up people who talked about going into space and rockets and spaceships and people living in there and going out and walking out in the things, and all the stuff they wrote about, all the crazy stuff, all the things that had not yet been done or been thought about, maybe thought about surely, but the scientists then did it. Why? Now, let's see if anyone has the same word I have. Why did the scientists do it? They had a
imagination.
A role
model.
They didn't have imagination. If they had imagination, they would have used it. But they had a role model to do something about it. What did the kids do in high school years ago? They built rocket ships. And they took all these explosive materials, I don't know why they all weren't killed, but they took this explosive material, put it in a can underneath some big tube, which is maybe a pipe of some sort or other. They tried to keep it light, of course, and then they put a point on the top because they felt it had to spear it away through the air, and then they shot it up in the air. And boom, it went up and went, and down it came. And the first rocketeers, the first creators, you know? Now, they had no imagination. They were not going somewhere. That came in the next generation. Their generation was merely to get off the ground. Their generation was merely to create a rocket. And, you know, the silly people, they reinvented the wheel. The very silly people reinvented the wheel. You know what they did? They figured out how to send rockets into the sky. If they had gone over to our brother nation, China, they would have found that gunpowder was already invented by the Chinese, and they were sending rockets out into space all the time with all sorts of fireworks going on with it, because that was part of their celebration. That was part of their recognition of the divine spirit illuminating the heavens, and they still do it today. It's part of their religious cultural activity, and rather fantastic. And their fireworks, you can be sure, are more sophisticated today than they ever were. And their fireworks are being used, and their techniques are being used by our scientists and them, because the Chinese and Japanese are some of the greatest innovator scientists in the world, and they're part of the universal team of sending these things off into space and doing that. Now, all of that is just to get you to the point of saying, yes. Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. Yes, there is a group of stem cells at work around us. Yes, there is a group of stem cells just waiting to come out. Yes, they're ready for their debutante ball. They're ready to come out and dance. They're ready to come out and sing. They're ready to come out and do anything you want them to do. They're like the genie, you know. They say, what would you have me do, Master? You want me to dance, to sing? You want me to make miracles that you call miracles? You want me to create beautiful experiences? You want me to have you be wealthy beyond your finest imagination? Not evil, like the devil. I will make you wealthy if you will sell me your soul, you know? None of that stuff. You see, you don't have to give up anything except one thing. And I should mention this right away. One thing you do have to give up. You have to give up the thought that it doesn't work. If you have the thought that it doesn't work in your consciousness, it won't work, because you have turned off the switch. And there's no way that it can work because you've turned off the switch. It may work for others. You say, well, you know, you're special, you know, you're Jesus, you're God, you're this, you're that, you know, no wonder it works for you. Well, no, it works merely because they turned the key on. They turned on the ignition. And when they turned on the ignition, it functioned. So he gets into the golf cart a lot of times over here, and she gets in one golf cart and another golf cart, and sometimes she gets in a golf cart and forgets to turn the ignition key on because she thinks it's just a switch and it doesn't go. And she says, oh yeah, 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 yeah. Then she turns the key. But you see, we can forget. We can get habit. You know, have you ever had a stick shift and an automatic? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got to remember which you're driving. Mm-hmm. If you don't remember which one you're driving, you get some pretty screechy wheel noises and gear noises, another thing. But you see, that's all part of the game. And it's a wonderful game. Fantastic game. My priority is my business. Okay. What is your priority? We're going to have you tell us that tomorrow morning. We're going to see what you're really going to say and how you're really going to express it and go on from there. Oh, we're supposed to do another chapter yet here, aren't we?
Yeah.
So let's take a pause, and then we'll go on to our next chapter here. these things, I mean, I could go on miles and miles and miles on each one of these here, have loads of fun with you guys, but we'll cut it off here and come on with Lecture 12 and move to a daily workshop after that. So, see ya.